You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined now by Bonnie Hawthorne, the filmmaker behind Dreaming of a Better World. It's a documentary we'll talk about today on Main Street. And Bonnie, by being the filmmaker, is the director, writer, cinematographer, and narrator. She plays a lot of roles on this. And she joins us from Joshua Tree, California. Thanks for being with us, Bonnie.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you, Doug.
Why did you want to make this documentary?
I'd been working as an editor. That's one thing you left off that long list of titles. on reality television shows for a number of years. And I decided, you know, if I was going to make a film, I just better go make one, you know. And I had met David Vedder through Molly Vedder, his niece. It's a really long story. I don't know if you want to get into it here, how I met Molly Vedder, but it involved a harrowing accident on a hike in Zion National Park in 2004. So I knew that Molly had a family farm in Nebraska. And when I started thinking about food, there were a couple things that happened that made me start thinking about food. I reached out to her and she said, oh, you should meet my Uncle Dave. He's pretty smart. So she arranged a dinner and I met him and I said, how come no one's ever made a film about you? And he said, no one's ever asked. So that's how it happened.
Well, David Vedder and his father, Donald Vedder, have this organic farming operation in Nebraska. Why did you get interested in food and organic farming and that kind of thing?
I was working on a reality show in Montana called Mountain Men. And I was listening to the radio one day, and there was a story about a farmer in Oregon, a wheat farmer, conventional wheat farmer, who found about 100 acres of little wheat shoots that wouldn't die when he sprayed them with Roundup. And he thought maybe something was wrong with his sprayer or his spray or whatever, so he went back the next week and sprayed them again, and they kept growing. So he took a sample to Oregon State University, and they said, why do you have this? You shouldn't have this. This is Monsanto Roundup Ready wheat that was never released commercially. And he said, I don't know why I have it. And USDA did a big investigation, came up with a big thick binder that basically ended with a shruggy on the last page. They couldn't figure out what happened or how it got there. But that was the first I'd actually thought about the genetic engineering that's going on in our food. I mean, I was super late to the game because this was 2013. So people were already fighting about Frankenfoods and various things, but I'd never really given it any thought. So I reached out to Molly and said, what do you know about this? And she said, that's when she said, you should talk to my Uncle Dave. He's pretty smart.
Dreaming of a Better World is the documentary. It'll be shown in advance of the Northern Plains Sustainable Agriculture Society's Northern Plains Food and Farming Conference in late January. The documentary will be shown at the Fargo Theater at 1:30 in the afternoon on Saturday, January 12th. Tell us about David Vedder, Bonnie. Who is he and why is he important in this sustainable agriculture story?
David Vedder went to the University of Lincoln, Nebraska, and got a degree in soil science agronomy and was going to get his master's in soil science agronomy and then go to seminary because he wanted to become a missionary and work in sustainable agriculture in, you know, in the mission space. And because the Vietnam War was happening, he was advised to just go right to the missionary school, or I guess they call it a seminary. And that's where he met Fred Kirschenman, one of your local North Dakota farmers, who at the time was in higher education. He was David's sort of counselor or advisor, head, whatever. I don't know. He was heading
up. He was teaching religion and philosophy at the time, I think.
Yes. So he got David's proposal, a white paper. And they were doing a program where students were combining becoming missionaries with another skill or interest. And so David's proposal was he wanted to minister to soil. And, of course, that caught Fred's attention. And so Fred said, I want to meet this kid. David was actually the guy who taught Fred about organic agriculture. He showed him that if you do it right, you can improve soil through organic agriculture. And that's what inspired Fred to go back to the family farm, which I think at the time was like 3,500 acres, and convert it to organic, which, you know, then of course launched his career in sustainable agriculture.
So Fred Kirschemann, then a professor, becomes the student of his student.
Absolutely. Yep. And in exchange, Fred convinced David not to become a missionary and convinced him that really his work was back home on the Vetter farm and ministering to soil. So he went back and he and his dad started this new form of organic agriculture.
And their farm is a rather small farm, even by Nebraska or North Dakota standards.
Well, as David says, it was a small farm when we bought it, and it's even smaller now because everything around them has grown so much. It's 280 acres. It's, you know, the state has it at like 272 for tax purposes or something. But yeah, it's under 300 acres. And from that, they produce a number of small grains and pastured pigs and cattle. And they're branching off into a lot of things. He's got a really great young farmer working there now who is bringing in all sorts of new thinking. And it's exciting because what's happened since David's dad passed, which is covered in the film, they formed a foundation. And so they're now trying to set up in order to train interns and young farmers in this particular farm management style. And they've got a young guy, I think he's like 25, 26 years old, who's just hitting it out of the ballpark. It's really exciting to see.
Well, the family story is intriguing, and you tell that story in the course of this documentary, that Don Vetter, after World War II, the government had these policies that encouraged the use of ag chemicals much more broadly than they'd been used before, like 2,4-D, those kinds of things. And when Don Vetter used it, he discovered some soil damage.
He discovered a lot of damage. Yeah, I mean, I didn't go deeply into it in the film. There's a possibility that I'm going to do a podcast of all of the remaining interviews. And he goes into it in much more detail and tells the story of, you know, one day he went out and sprayed the rows between his cornfield. And that night there was a big wind, you know, in Nebraska it can blow as it does in North Dakota. And his corn stalks all got cut off at about 4 inches above the ground, which is exactly where the spray hit. So his thinking was these chemicals didn't do what they were promised to do, and they were harming the soil and they were harming the wildlife on his farm. And he was a really interesting guy. He was very observant and very connected to the nature around him. He loved birds all the way up till his death. I mean, the birds on the farm are amazing. It's as if they know, well, they do know that that's a safe place for them to be. So pretty much any day of the year, if you're on the Vetter farm, you just hear a cacophony of birds. Whereas if you go to any of their neighboring farms, it's silent. And Don loved that.
There is an interesting image in the documentary where they're showing the difference between soil that has been chemically treated over many years and organic soil. And that chemically treated soil looks hard and it looks gray and cakey, and the organic soil is loose and black and moist.
So that's actually Fred Kirschemann. David showed him that example when David was a seminary student. That's part of what convinced Fred to go organic. That David was working on a farm in Dayton, Ohio, and, you know, had been there for a while and gave this comparison for Fred. So that's Fred doing that same comparison in the film that was made about him in the 90s called My Father's Garden. I don't know if you've ever seen that. And yeah, it's striking when you see it. And you can pretty much do a comparison like that of your own if you go visit an organic farm that lives next to a conventional farm. It is very striking. And the soil on the Vetter farm is just, I mean, it looks like chocolate. It's so rich and thick. And I mean, if you go to the website, dreamingofavetterworld.com, there's a photo right on the front page that shows David holding some of his soil. And I mean, you know, you just about want to eat it. It's so pretty.
Well, when David started this, he's about my age. He was a very unusual person in the part of the country where he was trying to practice organic farming. Now this has caught on a bit. There are more organic farms. There's even portions of the supermarkets that are identified as organic. But there still is this kind of tension, isn't there, between people who are organic farmers and those who use the conventional methods and might be right adjacent?
That's an understatement. Mm-hmm. Tension. I was shocked when I spent time in Nebraska, and I didn't just interview David and his family. I got what one of my producers called mission creep. I ended up with 38 interviews with farmers and scientists, some of them conventional farmers as well. But I was shocked to find that so many people farming in Nebraska don't really understand what organic is. Some of the ones who are evangelical Christians actually think it's the work of the devil. I had somebody say this to me. They think it's evil. And it's shocking to me, you know, because as you'll learn in the film, or, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners already know, we've only been using these chemicals since World War II. You know, it hasn't been the way we've always farmed. But now there are three, maybe four, in some cases five generations that have been farming that way, and they don't know that you don't have to use those chemicals to farm. It is more work. It takes more thought, as David says in the film. But, you know, we're really creating some problems because nature becomes resistant to some of these chemicals. There's a huge problem right now with glyphosate, which is Roundup. For the last, since the late 90s, the single system in use has been Roundup Ready. Roundup Ready corn, soybeans, cotton, for the most part. And a lot of weeds, well, a few in particular, they've become resistant to glyphosate. So they have now combined glyphosate with, in some cases, 2,4-D, and in other cases, dicamba. They've known since the 70s that dicamba is incredibly volatile and will drift all over the place. Even though they have allegedly reformulated it, there has been a major problem with drift all over the Midwest. I'm sure you've heard about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the thinking, to my mind, is just backwards. But that's what we're doing.
In your documentary, you take on the ethanol industry, and particularly you point out drift, cross-pollination of ethanol corn stock, which is identified as a hybrid called Enogen, that can infiltrate into other types of corn. And if this stuff is tested to be, you know, GMO okay, that can devalue those organic crops.
It can devalue regular crops as well. I mean, more conventional farmers than organic farmers have had Enogen contamination because they're closer to the guys who are farming the Enogen. And, you know, it's been an interesting process because as those guys get their corn crops rejected, they're starting to feel a little bit of the pain that they've been causing to their organic neighbors for years. You know, as David says in the film, it's an opportunity to sort of create some allies because as all of these new biotech products are introduced, they're going to cause problems for somebody. And, you know, David's been dealing with this contamination problem since the 90s, really. And now it's, you know, it's hitting other conventional farmers as well.
Your documentary had a startling statistic in it that I think probably relates to other farm states like North Dakota. 91% of Nebraska's land is in farms and ranches, but only 3% of Nebraska's population is on those farms and ranches.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, because a lot of rural communities rely on people being on farms.
Yeah, well, you know, what I didn't realize is it's super commonplace to have a service that you pay for that plants your seed, comes out, looks at it, tells you what chemicals and how much you should be using. They come out and spray it. They even come out and harvest it. And in some cases, they'll even market it for you. I mean, there's no other way to farm 10,000 acres plus. And that's, you know, that's commonplace. I read this morning that six of the big, you know, conglomerates, multinational corporations, Monsanto, Syngenta, Dow, DuPont, BASF, and another one, are actually trying to merge into three giant conglomerates. And, you know, it's just big ag is getting bigger. And it's, to me, it's frightening because, you know, that is limiting choices more and more. Choices for farmers, choices for eaters, choices for neighbors. You know, where is it going to stop? You know, I don't know.
What do you think is the most important thing you learned about sustainable ag during the production of your documentary?
Just how bad it really is. I had no idea. I mean, farmers, and we're seeing, you know, the suicide rates are so high among farmers because they're trapped. You know, they were encouraged to grow, a lot of them, by enormous equipment. You know, the whole thing that started back in the 60s or 70s with Earl Butz, when he said, get big or get out, created this like farm monstrosity mentality and got us away from the small farms. And a lot of these guys now are trapped in this. They have the giant like class 9 or class 10 combines and the giant tractors, and they're still paying for this stuff. And then what did we get? We got a big, you know, embargo with China. And, you know, everybody makes a big deal out of this bailout. When you really break it down, those farmers did not get a lot of money out of that bailout. A lot of people are really, really hurting all across the Midwest.
Bonnie Hawthorne is the filmmaker behind Dreaming of a Vetter World. Vetter is spelled V as in Victor, E-T-T-E-R. You can Google that title and find out lots of information. And Bonnie, as you mentioned, you have quite a varied production background, Jeff Probst, reality shows, and all kinds of stuff. What's your next project?
Well, I'm working on a short film about a small farm. I have four seasons with Tara and Matt Hall, who were Rhizosphere Farm out of Missouri Valley, Iowa. And they threw in the towel this year. So it's sort of a rise and fall of a farm story. It's not a happy story, but it's real, and we're going to see more of it.
And so this is real reality of filmmaking here. Some reality TV is a little bit organized, if you will. But this seems to be a niche you're working right now.
Oh, if you only knew.
Yes. Well, I kind of do, actually. But what I'm getting at is you seem to have found a new career here.
You know, I've found a new vocation. I wouldn't necessarily call it a career. I mean, editing reality television shows pays really well, you know, and I mean, I gave up a lot to kind of start making films. I am no longer in the editors' union with the fancy healthcare and all of it, but I'm happier and, you know, I'm sort of doing what I want to do, whether or not anyone else wants to see it, I don't know. But The people who have seen Dreaming of a Better World and have responded to it have responded very well to it. It's a tiny film. It's not going to be a blockbuster, but it's getting out a message that I think is important. And David Vedder is someone that people should know about.
You can see Dreaming of a Better World, that documentary, Saturday, January 11th at the Capitol Cinema in Aberdeen, South Dakota. And then the next day, Sunday, January 12th at the Fargo Theater, both of these showings at 1:30 in the afternoon. And those who are interested in the upcoming Northern Plains Food and Farming Conference can go to npsas.org. That's Northern Plains Sustainable Agriculture Society, npsas.org, and get lots of information about the upcoming conference. Bonnie Hawthorne, thank you for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, guys. It was so nice.
Decoded 8 Book is next.